I started this story over a decade ago, started writing the novel. It really inspired by my grandmother's stories that she grew up during that time period. And using a lot of those same research techniques that I would with my academic work, I came across just like a rich amount of research done on the birth control movement in the state in the 30s, and I was super, super intrigued.
And tell us a little bit about your novel's title, Covered Buttons. What does that represent?
It refers to the textile imagery and some of the folklore in the book that has to do with buttons, and actually some of the exchanges of messages that were taking place with between the characters. So this is it's a coming of age novel. It's set in 1939 Arkansas, and it follows 17-year-old Thea, who's been helping her father raise her 2-year-old brother. And so she finds herself basically at a crossroads of what's next in life. She's watching her friends get married, start families of their own, and suddenly she comes into contact with a group of women that really give her new ideas for independence and education. The first birth control clinic opened in Arkansas in 1931. This was basically the diaphragm was what the method was, and those that were eligible for birth control needed to come into the clinic and be fitted for that device.
And how was birth control viewed both in legal and medical circles and really just in the mind of the general public in the 1930s in Arkansas?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, there at that time, there was a law that was set into place, the Comstock Act, that did not allow the mailing of information about contraception. So it was really very much of a taboo. It was legal, but it was illegal to disperse that information. And so that was not overturned until 1936. So you can imagine that there was lots of really wives' tales floating around, about how to plan one's family to prevent further pregnancies and that kind of thing, which were not always, accurate, of course. And so this network of Little Rock Club women were really working to help with the education, help with the opportunities for these women, and change public perspective on this too.
And that was one thing that surprised me was that birth control was technically legal or was maybe in a gray area, but the information, just letting people know about it, was illegal and was so guarded and gatekept, for lack of a better word.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it certainly takes a long time for that perception to change. And so when I was putting together this novel and rewriting it over the years, that was something I really grappled with, because I was wondering if someone in my own family from rural Arkansas, where live 3 hours away, like how would they even know about it? How would they get there? And so that's how one of my protagonists was born, basically how she came about trying to bridge those gaps.
And so your novel delves into this, I think you call it a quiet network of support of mainly women who were seeking to educate other women about birth control back in the 1930s. How did that network function? What did it look like? Who was in it? And how would someone who needed it access it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Hilda Cornish, she was the daughter of German immigrants. She was the one that really spearheaded this in the early 30s and helped to organize. And she got together ministers from local churches, lawyers. There was a rabbi that was included. So really tried to connect the community. And so that network at the beginning, it was all on a volunteer basis. So the clinic had very limited hours. It was under a couple hours a week. And the women that worked there and the physicians were all volunteers. And so for the women to come in to make an appointment and get access, they needed to check a number of boxes. They needed to be married, be under a certain economic level, which that was pretty easy to meet, because at that time in our state, the The yearly salary was about half of what it was in the rest of the United States. So there was a time of poverty, and or it could also be what with a number of medical conditions. So when I was doing this research, I came across the work of a historian that she's based in Tennessee. Her name is Dr. Marianne Luong, and she had written her dissertation and a couple of book chapters about this. And she included in that the authentic letters of women that were seeking help. And these letters, they are absolutely heart-wrenching, you know, of them pouring out their souls and saying, you know, I'm married, I've got two or three kids, we're having trouble feeding the ones that we have, you know, we need help planning our family. And so how can we get that support? So, and in some instances it was, you know, like health concerns, that disease uterus, there was that kind of terminology. And they were told, you know, don't have any more children, but they weren't told how to prevent either. So.
And one thing about this story that stuck out to me was how the women involved in this viewed the sort of the role of community support and getting buy-in, avoiding controversy, sort of treating it as something separate from quote unquote radical feminism. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, the women were really working with the norms of society at that time. So it wasn't something where they were saying, you know, don't have children and go, you know, by any means. It was something of just really helping the women. They themselves had their own families, were mothers and wives, and they really believed in the plight of healthier mothers and healthier babies. And so that's what they were setting out for.
And, you know, reading this story and looking at the history of it, one can't really help but draw parallels to the present day and debates over contraception and birth control and just women's health in general. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a timely story. You know, I've been surprised in the last few years, some of these, I mean, for example, there was a reference to the Comstock Act in a major publication, a major newspaper in the U.S. a few years ago, not even a few, a couple. And so it's something that it feels like that in some ways some of these issues have come full circle, you know, with we're right about the 100-year mark, you know. And I still see a number of women working tirelessly for the healthcare and opportunities of women throughout the state, throughout the nation. And so I'm hopeful that, for me, this is a story of hope, and I hope it's one that the readers feel that as well.